Welcome to the Hockey Writers Maple Leafs Lounge, a weekly show from our Toronto Maple Leafs writing crew, bringing you the latest news, rumors, trades, player grades, prospects, and much more. From training camp to the playoffs, from draft day to the trade deadline, our team covers everything that happens with the blue and white. Come on in and pull up a chair. Welcome to the Maple Leafs Lounge.
Hello and welcome back to the Maple Leafs Lounge. I am your host, Peter Barachini, and as always, I'm joined by my colleague and Maple Leafs writer over at the Hockey Writers, Alex Hobson. Alex, it was just over a week ago where we were doing kind of like the post-mortem of the Maple Leafs season after their loss, the end of season press conferences, and literally days after, there's a lot more info and news that just unfolded. So we already talked about Dubas's press conference, and we're going to get into a lot of news and speculation and everything like that, because it's never a dull moment in Leafs Nation. But before we do, how are you doing?
Remember what I told you last week when you asked me that?
Oh, I really do. You really can
rinse and repeat that answer, buddy. I'm doing good, just for the purpose of the question. But no emotion that I'm feeling, and nothing that crosses through my mind can distract me from the elephant in the room that we got to discuss. So how are you doing?
I would say better, but not even any bit better compared to what, because actually last week I thought that there was some hope, and then literally on Thursday, Friday, that hope just went down the drain. So you know what, like I said last week, let's rip the band-aid off and just get right into it. Obviously during the week when we recorded, there was the Dubas press conference. We already talked about that, but days later, it seemed like, before we get into the whole Brendan Shanahan press conference, it seemed like Dubas had already made didn't make up his mind, and he was on the fence of returning as a GM, putting his family first, because it was a trying season on him and them as well, and understandably so. I mean, there was a lot of pressure on him considering what was on the line. And then right when you think that the Maple Leafs have something in place for a contract, there is the notion that, you know, Brendan Shanahan comes up, and then he says with his press conference that they are not signing him. They are letting him walk on July 1st. Big news, obviously, Alex, of what unfolded, but there's a lot of underlying and, you know, layers to this story that unfolded at minutes, hours, days later of what was going on. But I just want to get your initial thought on the Brendan Shanahan press conference, and yeah, what did you think of that? Because he was very detailed with the timeline and of the events itself.
I have not had a feeling of uncertainty like this since, I think, when Brendan Shanahan was originally hired, and the future was just, you know, Carlisle wasn't safe, Nonis wasn't safe, nobody was safe. And I really thought that with the way that this team went about kind of reshaping their future and the direction that they took back in 2016, I really thought it was going to be a long time before we were having a conversation like this again. But clearly that is not the case. And you know what? I'm going to tell you right now, I'm probably going to be repeating myself a bunch throughout this episode. I don't really know what to make of Shanahan's press conference yet. Knee-jerk reaction was this came out of nowhere, first of all. I think all the reports we were reading up until then made it sound like things were moving in a good direction. Even Shanahan himself said that things were moving in the right direction. And then, you know, to have it all sort of fizzle up and dry up like that overnight, and all of a sudden not have these two have a relationship anymore, it was kind of shocking, I'm not gonna lie. So I do think that we've only heard one side of the story so far. We got to hear what Kyle Dubas has to say. And he did say, obviously Chris Johnson pointed it out, that Kyle Dubas said there'd be a time and a place to discuss his side of the story. So it already sounds like he's planning his villain origin story, but there's so much more that we need to see unfold before I can give my full opinion on that whole thing. But so far, all I can say, it's very, very murky and very shady.
Yeah, definitely. And on the surface, it kind of looked like, you know, Shanahan was not necessarily being the bigger man out of all this, but he gave his perspective on what transpired, because apparently they had a contract in place. And apparently, according to David Alter, Shanahan approached Dubas after the trade deadline and that they'd seen enough that they wanted to extend him as the GM going forward. So then you have this timeline where they have something said, and that's, and the first round win sealed it a little bit more. And then you hear Dubas's press conference saying that there is some uncertainty. And then I could understand Shanahan saying that, listen, we thought we had something in place. Where did the uncertainty come from? Obviously, again, Dubas using his family. And if that is the case, so be it. Family is important. And then afterwards, it seemed like they had meetings on how to address the offseason. Dubas was in those meetings. And then all of a sudden, a new contract was given by his agent. So it's like, everyone is trying to point the blame at Dubas, saying that, well, you wanted to increase your contract, whatever you want to make, despite only winning one playoff round. Is that enough? They're trying to say, you know, was that really the right move to try and like put the advantage in his favor? And then Shanahan comes back and says, no, big N-O, no, in regards to that. So he shot that down pretty quick. And you know, you also hear reports, I believe it was from The Athletic, that they were butting heads for some time because Dubas or Shanahan was, you know, trying to veto the moves that he was trying to make to improve the team. And those are the events that kind of transpired. And I just want to get your take on that. Like you said, we only heard one side of the story so far. Is like, this is a less than ideal situation at this point, no?
Yeah, it definitely is. And you know, I'm not going to pretend like there's not any better option out there than Kyle Dubas. Like, you know, for as much as I think that the Leafs would have been best served keeping him as GM and perhaps parting with a core player or a coach or something like that instead. I also think that, you know, on paper, the results are what the results are. He's been GM since 2018. They've only won one playoff round. And so in that case, I think it is definitely a bit of a concern to have something fizzle up like that. At the same time, I don't know. It's just, it's a tough situation to kind of wrap your head around, because on one hand, you're wondering what kind of moves Dubas potentially wanted to make that Shanahan wasn't letting him make. And, you know, at this stage of Dubas's career, I think he's done enough to, you know, kind of want the right to have that full, kind of like full control of all the moves that he was going to make. So it's just overall, like I said, it's a tough situation. We only know one side of the story right now, so it's really hard to address the severity of the situation. And I think a lot of the criticisms and a lot of the takes on the situation are going to have to wait until we figure out who Shanahan hires in his place, because he could go solid, he could go bad, and he could go really bad.
Yeah, and you know what's funny? The movie Moneyball was on the other day, and in the very opening, it's you know, Billy Beane going to the owner of the Oakland Athletics saying, listen, I need more money. You give me the more money, you give me more power, I can put together a competitive team. Owner was basically shutting that down. And that was the kind of vibe that I got with this, with, you know, if Dubas is making the moves necessary to make your team competitive and bolt this team more and make them more competitive than just a one win round team kind of thing. I don't know if that makes sense. So a team that could just win one round and then fall apart in the second, you kind of start to see where things are going with that. And the fact that Shanahan possibly vetoed moves that probably would have even been more beneficial to this team says a lot about that. Maybe Shanahan really isn't the so-called nice guy in all this, because there's a lot going on that we don't know. And there's something apparently on Elliot Freeman's 32 Thoughts, the podcast, when the exit interviews happened, players were very blunt about the situation or how the season or the playoffs unfolded. And you could tell that it was very tense. So obviously, yeah, Dubas made necessary moves, but at the same time, if there was one or two moves that could have been more substantial than what they had already had, and Shanahan said no to that, then you have that conflict, and you have two people that should be on the same page not being on the same page. And if I'm Shanahan, you stuck by Dubas's side for all this time. You made him the GM. Why not give him that autonomy and power and trust? Like, it felt like there was no trust in all this from his part. And that's what's really disappointing from my perspective in all this.
Well, yeah, I agree with that. And I also think that, you know, you hear Shanahan talk about Kyle Dubas this entire time. He's given him super glowing reviews and saying, you know, there were multiple points.
Not a reflection on what he's done or anything like that.
Like he wanted to extend Dubas last summer, but Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment wanted to wait until the full five-year contract had passed. Mm-hmm. And then you look at, you know, even like you said before, like around the trade deadline, they had a verbal agreement. They had that verbal agreement in place up until that press conference on Monday. And then, you know, so it's like, if Shanahan was so confident in Kyle Dubas as his guy this entire time, then why did he make the decision and lose all that trust overnight? Right. I think that's the, mm-hmm. that's the confusing part about all this. And it's, you know, you could say that it has to do with, you know, maybe feeling a bit of betrayal or feeling a sense of like, you know, one day you're, you know, you don't know if you can commit to it. The next day you can commit to it, but you want a lot more money for it. You know, from Shanahan's perspective, maybe that feels like a bit of a stab in the back, but at the same time, you shouldn't be making those kind of decisions with your emotions, right? Mm-hmm. So, I don't know. Like I said, we need to hear about what the side of the story that Dubas tells. And I think only at that point will we be able to say whose mistake this was, because there's an argument to be made that Dubas overplayed his hand. There's also an argument to be made that Shanahan made a decision, a crucial decision for this team, with his emotions. And you can't be doing that when you're in a position like president of the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Yeah, and I think that's the most important thing right now. It seems like both sides were, as a result of this conflict or this mutual parting from both sides. And it's interesting to note that earlier on Monday that Darren Dreger tweeted out that the Fenway Group, owners of the Pittsburgh Penguins, had been granted permission to speak with Dubas. And this is literally a week after Dubas said that it's either Toronto or nothing. So it kind of feels like maybe that was part of his maybe negotiation tactic to try and say, hey, this is where I want to be. And now all of a sudden, he also said that, you know, you're not going to see my name pop up a week later or something like that. And yet here we are a week later, and his name is being brought up in regards to a possible opening for the Pittsburgh Penguins. But we'll see. It is very disappointing because, I mean, Dubas has his critics. I mean, let's face it. They come out in droves whenever something bad happens, but he's made a lot of good moves. And whenever there was a bad move, he did his best to try and correct it. And that's a GM that knows how to learn on the fly, learn from the past, and better himself as a person and as a general manager. So I think that this is, like you said, a rash decision to let him go, because there are not many candidates that I would have faith in if they were to overtake Dubas.
And what I always say to people when they bring up his bad moves is that for a lot, and I would almost say all of his bad moves, you can at least understand the logic about why he made that move in the first place. Mm-hmm. For example, you know, people will bring up the fact that he didn't negotiate hard enough with Mitch Marner, that Marner kind of, you know, stole the leverage and took that $10.6 million. And maybe he should have played him a little tougher. You know, as much as I understand that, people got to remember that at that time in 2019 or whatever it was, we were still kind of coming into this new Auston Matthews, Mitch Marner era. And we were still coming out of an era where Tyler Bozak was the number one center of this team. Phil Kessel was the most marketed name. Mm-hmm. And
Diafanov was the number one defenseman.
He was. The goaltenders were J.S. Jaguar, James Reimer, Jonathan Bernier. Like, we have been through some dark times in Toronto. And I think what a lot of people need to remember is that, you know, for where the team was at the time and how long it had been since they had bona fide homegrown stars on their team, I think the reaction would have been a lot meaner from the fan base if Dubas messed up the negotiations with Marner and someone offer sheeted him, or he demanded a trade, soured his relationship, as opposed to paying him that 10.6. Because at least at the time, you can say, oh, you know, that's a little pricey. But at the same time, if he delivers in the playoffs, if he takes this team to a Stanley Cup, I don't know. I don't care how much it costs. And clearly that hasn't happened. So that's, again, something that you look back on. You say it's one of Dubas's worst moves. Well, at least you can understand why he made the move in the first place. You can do that with just about anything that he did.
Mm-hmm. Very true. Very true. moving on to our next point, because the Maple Leafs don't have a full-time GM, I believe Brandon Pridham was given that interim tag at the moment. But given where they are and how close the offseason is, because the draft is literally close to a month away, free agency is around weeks after that. How are the Maple Leafs going to handle this bad spot that they are in right now, given what they need to do and how close the offseason is?
I did say I was going to be repeating myself a lot this episode, so I'm going to bring this one out again. I need to wait and see who their GM is until I can comment on that, because mm-hmm. I'm going to feel a lot more optimistic for the sake of the team heading into the offseason if they hire someone like an Eric Tulski from Carolina or a Mike Fuda from LA, as opposed to if they were to walk away with Peter Chiarelli or Jim Benning or something like that. There's a lot of intriguing options out there. There's some decent options and there's some really, really bad options. So as much as it seems like a cliche to say, whoever this team picks up as their GM is going to drastically shape how I feel about the spot they're in. Because I think I can see why Shanahan would want to go with somebody with a little more bite and someone who's got a little more experience and, you know, has made these tough decisions before. But I also think they got to make sure that whoever's coming in knows, listen, priority number one, get Austin Matthews extended.
Yeah.
Priority number two,
Nylander extended.
Yeah, Nylander too. So there's just, I've got a lot more faith in someone like an Eric Tulski accomplishing that than I do someone like a Jim Benning, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, I don't think either of those names have been directly linked to the Leafs. I'm just kind of spitballing based on who's out there. But yeah, there's a lot of moves to make this offseason. And I didn't think that we'd be sitting here talking about anybody other than Dubas making these decisions. So it's an unknown period and an unknown territory for me right now. So I need to see who that GM is before I can comment on what the, what I think that their odds are of turning the team around and establishing themselves in a good spot.
Absolutely. I absolutely agree with you on that assessment, because there, like you said, you mentioned a few names already, and I agree that those are names that they should look out for, but at the same time, there have been links to, you know, as you mentioned, Jim Benning, Peter Chiarelli, Mark Bergevin. These are GMs that have had experience, but have made a lot of questionable moves that have forced their way out of the current or out of the market that they were previously in.
Just to clarify too, before, because I know that statement might be misconstrued a little bit if people don't know. None of these names have actually been linked to the Leafs. Like, it's not like they're talking to Jim Benning or Peter Chiarelli or anything.
Yeah.
They were just listed off. I think it was Chris Johnson listed off a bunch of guys that mm-hmm. could fit the bill of what Shanahan wanted. But yeah, they haven't been linked to any of these guys directly, I don't think.
No, absolutely. And that is a good, like, you know, reminder that these are like names that have been in the business for so long. And like I mentioned, yeah, they have been in the business for so long, but they've forced their way out because of bad decisions that they have made. And you're very skeptical on bringing in a Bergevin, a Chiarelli, based on their history, because Chiarelli was GM of a team that, you know, with the Edmonton Oilers for some time, had Connor McDavid and had a hard time to surround him with the talent that they have right now. So begs the question, is he really the guy to try and put the trust in to try and surround the talent for Austin Matthews, Marner, and Nylander at this point? Because I don't think they are the answer. And they need someone that needs to have that still new school thinking, but still know the ins and outs of how to negotiate and everything like that. And there are a lot more qualified people at this point than, let's say, those are the GMs of the past that it may have worked, you know, back then, but maybe now it's a different game. And they, even in the last few years, like, there are some moves that Bergevin made that were very questionable and suspect. Chiarelli, you name it. And you look at some of these other names that are in the market right now where they've been assistant GMs, but they've had more control and had more success in developing the team or putting together the team that they have. So before we get into a quick fire question, I don't know why I used quick twice there, but before we get into a quick fire question, there we go. That's a little bit better. Here is a quick word from the Hockey Writers.
Interested in writing for the Hockey Writers? If you have experience writing about hockey, are passionate about the sport, and are looking to take your writing to the next level, the Hockey Writers could be the place for you. Here at THW, you will have the opportunity to hone your craft at one of the world's largest and most respected hockey publishers. You will have control over what you write, be able to seek out media credentials, and be supported by a large network of writers and editors. Plus, you'll get paid for doing it. If you're interested and want to know more about team openings and requirements, please visit the Write for THW page on the Hockey Writers website. A link to that page is also listed in the description.
And we are back, and as I said there's a quick word,
there's a lot of quickness going on here.
And speaking of which, the Maple Leafs need to act quickly and bring in a name, because hey, it kind of worked itself out there. Mic drop, there we go. The quick fire question I have for you, Alex, is obviously you listed off a bunch of names too. You know, Brandon Pridham is in the system already. Eric Tulsky, Mike Shuda, the Maple Leafs have been linked to him in the past. Who would you see as the best fit as general manager for this team?
Okay, so I know that this isn't a quick fire answer. I already know that I'm breaking the rules here. But I'm going to give two options.
You can add a little explanation in.
If I had to pick someone that I want to be the GM of the Leafs going forward, it would be Eric Tulsky, because I think he had a big hand in that defensive core in Carolina, big hand in the way the team was built to be, like, just in general. And he's young and he's analytically minded. So I think that I'd like to see the Leafs go after him. In terms of who I think the best fit is for the Leafs, hearing what Brendan Shanahan said, I think Leaf fans should really start to, you know, get comfortable with the idea of Brad Treliving as the GM. And, you know, I'm not going to lie, I was a little skeptical on it at first, but I've been sitting on a little bit and thinking about it a little more. And I actually think that he gets a little bit of a bad rap because of how good Tkachuk is doing right now. I think a lot of people forget that he obviously his hands were tied in that moment. So the fact that he was able to get anything of a good return for Tkachuk is pretty impressive. That completely ignores the fact that the two players he managed to get were a solid top four defenseman and an MVP forward from the year before. Mm-hmm. And people will point at Huberto and say, oh, he gave him a terrible contract. And he only had 60 points or whatever it was this year. He was getting suffocated by Daryl Sutter. And I think a lot of people underestimate how much of a toll Sutter's presence had taken on that Flames dressing room. So the point that I'm trying to get to here is that Treliving has shown that he's been able to make tough moves like that. Shanahan wants someone that's able to make a tough decision. And I think, you know, if you surround him with the right guys, I think he's something that Leaf fans could be able to come around to in the future. He wouldn't be my first choice, but I do think that based on Shanahan's criteria and what he said, I think Treliving is probably the front runner right now.
Yeah. And you know what? All the, like, you know, general managers that have that experience, Treliving does have somewhat of a better track record. I mean, he did sign Jacob Markstrom, and Jacob Markstrom has turned into a very steady, you know, top number one goaltender, and even a Vezina front runner, but, you know, a contender for the Vezina himself. And, you know, you look at the draft history too, Jacob Peltier, looking like a strong prospect coming up right now, Connor Zeri, Matt Coronato, Dustin Wolf as well. Yeah, Dustin Wolf, same year, 2019, and he had an outstanding season in the AHL. Last season, 2022, only 3 picks, maybe not going to get a lot of substance there, but he has drafted strong players in the first few rounds. Maybe you want to try and get more of a sense in the second and third. I do agree with you there that Eric Tulsky probably would be wishful thinking because of how quick he's risen up in the Hurricanes organization and what he's done phenomenally, or he has done a phenomenal job overall. But I wonder if maybe the Maple Leafs stick within the system and still keep Brandon Pridham on hand. Now, there's still the possibility that they can let him walk because I believe the Flames previously wanted to talk to him, but they already hired Craig Conroy as their general manager. So if I'm Brandon Shanahan,
is in their front office now too.
Exactly. And so we could cross Notice's name off that list. But if Pridham, he's the one that knows the ins and outs of the salary cap. He knows how to manage contracts. He knows the math. He knows what goes into everything. I think he would be the most ideal candidate. And yes, you want someone as an experienced general manager. But him being working under Kyle Dubas for all these years, I think he's had a hand in dealing with all those contract situations himself. So I think that's a huge bonus for them, and it would be a huge mistake to let him walk. Now, again, on the flip side of things, if Dubas walks, we already saw Jason Spezza leave because they were trying to possibly use him in a managerial role further down the line. With Pridham now here, he's the only one possibly remaining in that, you know, close circle with Dubas. I say keep him. And as much as I want Tulsky, as much as I want Fuda, I think all three are deserving of it. But you already have someone in-house. I think this is where you got to take advantage of that.
Yeah, I agree. My only concern with Pridham would be, I think he's really specialized in you know, cap crunching and just knowing the salary cap inside and out too. I do wonder about, you know, how much experience he has managing hockey teams and doing the trades and the player side of thing like that. But I do think that he's a bright mind. And even if he doesn't take over as GM, I do really hope the Leafs do what they can to keep him. Remember how I said for True Living, I think that I'd be easier to stomach if he had a good team around him. Pridham is a big part of that team. So I do hope the Leafs try and retain him if they can.
Absolutely. And throughout all this time, he's always been with the Maple Leafs, special assistant to general manager and assistant general manager since 2018-19. And that, I believe, was the year that Dubas took over as the general manager role. So in that essence, 5 years working under him, I mean, you want a full-on general manager or someone with that general manager tag, but considering how smart he is, I think he would do a great job. And I do agree with your point previously before that as well. But moving on, I guess that was a bit of an extended quick fire round, but from that instance to the core four, I mean, we talked about last week how they wanted to stay here, how adamant they were. They wanted to be lifelong Leafs. Obviously, the players had a close relationship with Dubas. I mean, let's face it. Same with Jason Spezza. Austin Matthews and Spezza, Marner and Spezza, everybody had those close relationships with those two people because of how impactful they were on the ice and how they were serving as mentors and leaders on the team. With both of them gone, is this sort of like a domino effect where maybe we do see players like Austin Matthews test the market next year? Same with William Nylander. Is this sort of the beginning of the end, or is this still too early to hit the panic button?
Thank you.
Or is it still wait and see until who the GM is?
Wait and see, baby. You know what? I will expand on that, though, because I do think that it's important to acknowledge that, yes, things will likely change and it won't be as easy of a path as it would have been if Dubas was GM, because, you know, he had that relationship with the players the entire time that they were here. And so it's tough to imagine that Matthews would be still right on track, good to go to sign this extension, not knowing who his GM is. That being said, I've been seeing a lot of doom and gloom on social media over those quotes from 32 Thoughts about how the signing process is delayed or how Austin Matthews is not expected to sign a deal right away
before July 1st, even though it's July 1st that
even going past that, though, because people are now worried that it's not going to happen in the offseason and that they're going to go into the season without an extension. And while that is still a possibility, I just want to remind everybody that the reports right now are that Austin Matthews is not expected to sign a deal at the same time that he was a week ago when Kyle Dubas was here. None of the quotes are saying the chances of Austin Matthews signing with this organization have dropped now that Kyle Dubas isn't here.
Mm-hmm.
And again, this goes back to my consistent answer this entire time of wait and see, wait and see, wait and see who the GM is. Again, just like I said, I'd have a lot more faith in Eric Tulsky or a Mike Fuda or a Brandon Pridham-led Leafs team signing Matthews to an extension than I would a Peter Chiarelli-led Leafs team. Now, again, those are the two extremes on either side of the spectrum. I don't know who is going to be this GM, and I don't know how he's going to tackle the negotiations, but it's kind of hard to expect Matthews to stay right on course with that and, you know, sign this extension when the future of the team is in limbo from a management standpoint. You'd have to imagine that Matthews is going to meet with this new GM, whoever it is, they're going to have a conversation, talk about the future. And if Matthews sees a fit here in the future, I guarantee you he'll resign here. But, you know, if he doesn't feel good, if he maybe he feels that the future is not in good hands and he has people that he won't be able to establish long-term relationships with, then yeah, maybe he tests the market. So we just have to wait and see, because a lot of it depends on who's going to be signing that contract.
Yeah. Couldn't have said it better myself. Wait and see, because I think that this is a little bit one situation that's a little bit too early to tell, because we don't know fully what's going on behind closed doors or the process involved with it. We can just only speculate, but at the same time, let's see how things play out leading up to the draft, leading up to free agency, because I believe that I'm almost 100% certain that he cannot sign a contract until after July 1st. It's leading up to it where he can't sign it, or he's not able to, so he couldn't sign it anyways. But, you know, he did say he wanted to get a contract done before next season. Now, he did say that when Dubas was still technically in charge or still at the helm. But what if his intentions are that he still wants to get a deal done? I mean, like you said, let's just play it out. Let's take a step back, breathe.
You remember his quote from a couple weeks ago it feels like a couple weeks ago now, but no, it was really only like maybe a week and a half ago. But you remember how he was like, Toronto is where I want to play. I've made that clear. I don't want to play anywhere else.
Mm-hmm.
He did not say Toronto is my home. I only want to play here for the rest of my career, but only if Kyle Dubas is here. Right.
Yeah, no.
Like it's just, I understand that we're kind of in doom and gloom mode right now because we're actually seeing change for the first time in this era. But I really, as much as I think that absolutely the GM will have an effect on Matthews' decision and what he wants to do long-term, I really don't think that it's that, you know, kind of like live or die by who the GM is. I don't think it's that cut and dry. So
again, like you said, I'm going to repeat you. Let's wait and see what happens, because I mean, it was an eventful week. Let's hope that maybe next week we still have something to talk about and maybe something big happens. Maybe we do get a new GM in the fold and we could talk about that. But two eventful weeks in the books for the Maple Leafs after their first round loss or second round loss to the Florida Panthers. That is all that we have for this episode of the Maple Leafs Lounge. Be sure to check out the Hockey Writers on all of our fantastic team pages, including the Toronto Maple Leafs, where you will find great stuff from Alex, myself, and everyone else covering the Maple Leafs there. That is all that we have for this episode of the Maple Leafs Lounge. For Alex Hobson, I'm Peter Barachini, and we will see you next time on the Maple Leafs Lounge.